Sentire Media.
Buona Pasqua, happy Easter. It is the week of Easter here in Piobico, Italia. Ashley's sitting right across from me.
Ciao, hoppity hop, hop, hop.
I'm Jason. Together we live at Cacamone, a little agriturismo in the foothills of Piobico, the Apennine Mountains. La Tavola Marche. Hi, buddy. We have next to me Leroy, the Great Dane, looking as, who the hell am I talking to?
Mm-hmm. He keeps looking out the door like, who is Jason talking to?
And Maggie, the head of the Omega Moos, she's curled up sleeping. We're all here. It's a drizzly morning.
Perfect for a podcast.
Yeah, it's spring. Spring has sprung. A lot has gone on since the last podcast, so let's just get right into it.
I know.
Spring ride, the weather. The weather has been very spring-like lately around here in central Italy. And today is drizzly and a little bit cool.
But we're supposed to get a good rainstorm today. Thankfully, it's been a decently damp spring so far. Because we just didn't get any snow.
No snow. No real hard winter this year. But one thing we've noticed on our daily walk, our bi-daily walks today with the dogs, is the deer.
Oh, yeah.
The deer are out. Mm-hmm. And every morning when
they're barking, they're passing through the fields, they're moving. This morning I saw five different deer in different places. Two passed right in front of us. Sometimes Leroy sees them in the fields, sometimes he don't.
So the deer families who live in the hills around our house, they know our dogs and they know us, and they've started taunting the dogs a little bit. They know Leroy is kind of slow and he'll give up after a couple hundred meters.
They don't run away right away.
No,
anymore.
They watch him. They watch him run at him.
All right, let him get a little bit closer, and once it's really time, we'll take off. And he only has a little spurt of energy to follow them anyway. And
it's a lot of mass to get moving.
And going straight up hills, and he comes back with his tongue hanging low.
But we've gotten semi on schedule. We're all done with the pruning and the fertilizing of
chips.
Yeah, we made our chips, the wood chips,
Chipotriche,
to put around all the flowers once it comes.
Which was an impulse purchase 2 years ago that we only end up now really using once a year.
So I come home one day and Ashley looks at me and goes, I bought something. I think we've talked about this.
We probably did.
I go, what'd you buy? I'm thinking like shoes or like, I don't know, a piece of furniture. I have no idea. And she takes me over to the computer and shows me. And it's a wood chipper. Like the kind of wood chipper from Fargo at the
totally
end.
Totally. Pretty hardcore.
And it's like, oh, all right. The sad part is we only use it a couple hours a year because you can plow through a lot of branches in 2 hours.
Yeah, we cut down some even small trees and put a good amount of it through. And the chips are awesome to use throughout the pots and the beds up around the house. And it helps to keep the cats from trying to poop in the beds and the chickens from nesting in the they don't seem to get into the chips the same way they do just the loose dirt, which helps. But also, obviously, with weeds and stuff. But it's awesome to use. Yeah, we plowed through a ton in just a short amount of time. But, yeah, then you put it away.
Yeah.
Jason's like, so that's it.
So I'm like, in 20 years, this will have only 40 hours of work on it. So now I can go on to Facebook Marketplace and say, Pokuzato.
Exactly.
It's 20 years old, but hardly
used. Exactly. So I'll charge the same price as what I bought it for.
Exactly.
We planted some fruit trees.
We've had a lot of fruit trees die in the last 2 years. And talking to people around here, I didn't know that fruit trees have a lifespan of about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they got diseases or whatever.
And since our position of having a stream behind that wraps kind of from behind the house around the front to the side, I mean, and then a river in the front, that it can cause a bit more, especially winter humidity, which cannot be great for some of these fruit trees too. So we picked a different spot. If you've been to our place closer by the driveway and up where the berries are. So hopefully it's got some better sun and wind to pass through. But we did Three cherries, two apples, and two randos that were left at the Vivayo. To get up.
So the guy at the nursery knows us well. We go in every
very well.
We look at the end. He's like, "Hey, do you have space?" I'm like, "Yeah." What do you mean? He's like,
"He knows we got space."
He goes, "Well, these two trees, I lost the tickets for them. I have no idea what they are. Just take them.
They need to be planted.
She's like, "I don't know, apple, pear, something like that."
And it was just classic because Jason came home with two more trees, which was one of those just Jason maneuvers typically of like coming home with more than what he was going to get. And I was like, "What are you doing?" He was like, "No, he gave them to me. It's just a chest." So we'll see. They'll probably end up being the best trees we have. Who knows?
I hope so. I hope we don't just kill them all.
Because the blueberries didn't really take.
No,
now, I probably didn't do the work that was needed for fertilizing.
Was it 2 or 3 years ago we planted?
2 years ago? 2 or 3 years ago?
We planted a line of raspberries, a couple of vines for table grapes, and five blueberry bushes. The raspberries did okay. The grapes got a disease. Everyone's grapes last year got this weird fungus thing, so we didn't get really any grapes.
The raspberries did pretty freaking good.
The blueberries just didn't really blast off. They looked sick and small, and I think
we got like a handful out of the whole year.
I think the pH needed to be much lower, much more acidic.
Well, when I look online, some of these blueberry turned into like gigantic bushes,
yes,
and we got nowhere near that. They never really grew.
If you look online, the Bourgainville or whatever
turns
into a freaking tree.
True.
It just depends on if it has the right conditions. And we did not. I know that our water is higher in pH. It's up towards the high sevens, low eights. And these need a acidic. So if you're giving them higher pH water all the time, it's going to wash out the acidity of the dirt. That's what I think. So.
Well, I talked over you earlier. You mentioned, too, I started talking about the cheeps, but fertilizer. And what that means out here is
poop.
Go on, get yourself some poop. So you start talking to your neighbors who have horses, have cows. And there's some horses. There's the truffle guy has a house along our road with two horses. And we called him or WhatsApped him, whatever. And, "Hey, can we get some of your poop?" And he said, "My father-in-law needs it, but ask Pasquale." And he's the main guy running the family farm for the Mokies, which is a big family in our little town. And they own a ton of property and a ton of cows. And so it sounded like, and Jason came to find out, near everyone in town goes to the Mokies
it
to
was
get
like,
their poop.
It was like the watering hole. Like the amount of people I saw there that day. So I was really excited because I got to actually be a farmer for once instead of just playing farmer.
And it meant you got to put both of your tractors to work.
Yeah. So I wanted to bring the smaller tractor with the loader up to the poop pile and then take the bed and the cart with the bigger tractor to load, make trips back and forth.
And this place, if you've been out to visit, is this farm is kind of halfway between town and our main road and just up the hill a little bit. So you kind of have to go up a little bit of a...
No, it's a steep... It's a big climb on a crappy, muddy... tractor road
that then just turns into field mud road
once you get to the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I didn't realize how much time it takes for farmers to move their equipment around. It took me, you know, a couple hours to set everything up how I needed it.
And then needing a ride back to get, because you're dropping something off up there, so you call me.
Exactly. And then come back and pick up the other tractor and yada, yada, yada. So I'm finally all
set. And you're driving, just to give people an idea, how many kilometers?
It's 6.5 down our road, and then it's another
like three or four.
Yeah,
okay, so
about
10
kilometers.
But you're only going 10 kilometers, but this takes half a day.
Well, not half a day, but yeah.
No.
So I'm really excited. I get up there. With the first load, I scoop it. You know, I'm not that good with the loader, so I take my time. Luckily,
good practice.
No one was watching me, so I got it all loaded up. And I go to start the big tractor to go down the hill. Now,
the big tractor's the old Zetor that we basically got for free.
The big tractor's brakes are non... Let's just say it doesn't really brake that well. So I really need to have...
Everyone's told us that it was born without brakes.
So I really need to have what are called the reduction gears. So this has 5 speed... Actually, 10 forward gears and 10 backward gears. 5 in low and then 5 in high. So think of the low first gear as being like... barely a walk, and it lets the engine
crawl.
It's a crawl. So if you're going downhill, you don't have to brake at all. And I found that third gear in the low setting is the perfect slow walk down this hill, especially since I don't have brakes and I have a full load of manure behind me. I don't want to hit the brakes. I just want to go nice and slow down. So I get it all going, get into the cab, go to the beginning of the descent to the hill, stop the tractor, go to try to put it in the lower gears. You have to stop the tractor, put everything in neutral, and then there's a lever to switch. And normally this lever needs a little shove, like you kind of have to hit it with the palm of your
hand.
Or maybe you have to go forward, a foot or two, and then stop again and give it a little and go in. Well, it wasn't going in, and the sun was going down. And I have no lights on this tractor at all. It has no electrical system that works at all. So instead of giving another little oomph with my hand, I thought a little kick of the heel, that'll probably do better to get it in there than the... Yeah, I broke the lever. I didn't broke the transmission, I don't think, but I definitely broke the lever. So the lever just felt blah, 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 like there's nothing connecting to it. Awesome. Luckily, it was stuck in the high gear, so at least I can move the tractor. However, now I'm stuck on top of this hill with a load behind me that I can't bring down because I don't really have brakes. And the small tractor, the load probably weighs more than the small tractor itself, so that's not a good idea either. So screw it. Leave it. Come back tomorrow. Come back tomorrow, see if I can, figure something out. I don't know. So the next morning I'm there screwing around with it. Up comes Frankino. Frankino is the caretaker. He's like the head caretaker of the Smoky Farm.
We know Frankino well. He was born in this house. He's the polenta man. He is the all-around random handy guy for festivals and basket weaving in town. And he's a total character. And he's what? 86.
Sure. Uh-huh. Definitely wait. I remember his 80th birthday, and it wasn't a year or two ago.
No.
It was a while. He is cut from another cloth. Anyway,
absolutely.
Comes up, tell him, what's going on? How you doing? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tell him my problem. He goes, okay, well, detach the Corella. What's it? What do I call this in English?
Trailer.
Trailer. Thank you. Jeez. Detach the trailer. I'll bring the trailer down with my tractor, park it at the bottom of the hill, and then you can just come back behind and then hook it up when you get down there. And then
now you don't have the extra weight.
Now you don't have the extra weight. And from there on, it's pretty flat, right?
But he said, keep going.
And I go, okay. So he gets it to the bottom of the hill. He comes back up, and I'm just kind of sitting there. And he goes, well, go on, I'm going down. I go, listen, I'm not comfortable doing this. And I'm really scared of this tractor, to be quite honest. And to have first gear only in high, which is a faster, it goes even without a load behind you, it goes down this hill faster than I want to go. I want to go a nice, slow walk. Just keep out of the ruts and just let the tractor just go down the hill. Basically, he looks at me sideways, and I go, yeah, I'm not a good pilot. I'm not confident in doing this. He basically called me a pussy. Basically, he goes, well, one without confidence.
Courage. Someone needs to have courage.
Someone would need to have a little courage to go down the hill. And I go, yeah, that's not me. And he looks at me sideways and goes, fine. He drives around the tractor for 2 minutes, seeing what happens when he gets on the brakes, and he deemed it in that 2 minutes fine. He goes down with no problem, parks it at the end. I thank him 100 times, and I think he lost a little respect for me this day.
I know.
So my first time.
He's a big American, a little bit of a big puss. What,
I'm sure he told that story. So my first time being a real farmer, really having to do some work, failed miserably. Now I have a broken tractor and can't get more than one load of manure.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So that was fun.
That was fun. So that was the big funny, funny ha-ha from the spring.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I still haven't fixed the tractor yet. I mean, it's okay to – it still goes, but you only have the high gears, so.
And then you were able to bring the – attach everything and bring the manure back.
Yeah, yeah, on flat ground, it's exactly. Not a problem because especially with the trailer, it slows itself down really easily. I mean, I'm just worried about – all that weight pushing me forward.
I was like, I don't care if he thought you were.
I didn't really either, to be honest.
Courageous.
I could tell he lost a little respect for me.
I know.
So that's basically the spring. We're ready to fertilize and we're ready to start planting for the first thing to go in should be the potatoes here. We're waiting for the correct phase of the moon, of course. Hello, can't plant potatoes out of the moon phase.
No, you'll get green potatoes.
So waiting for that, and that will be, it should be this week. It's raining. I'm actually going to miss the window, but what are you going to do? We finally finished processing all the pigs. Whew. Good grief. That was a lot of work. The last thing we did was made chicholi, the little crackle. It's not the pork skin. Chicholi are the little, when you render down the lard to make the rendered lard, all the little pieces of meat and
bits
will come up to the top.
That were still attached to the fat.
Will come up to the top. And those are called the chicholi. And what you do is when they turn a deep golden brown, you skim them off and then you put them in a hemp cloth. Twist
heavy.
It. Heavy, heavy hemp because it just doesn't burst. Like it can take it. And then they have this...
So we had our neighbor come over at Basilio, and there's lots of different ways to do this chicholi. Our friend Carlo, who has the pig farm, he does a ton of pigs. So he's created his own
device.
Like
a screw. Yeah.
That's like a
press with a screw.
Strain screwed press. Yeah.
And those things, and it smushes them down to nothing. The reason you have to squeeze them is you have to get all the fat out of them, and you have to do it when it's immediately when it comes out of the boiling fat, because the fat's so much more fluid then. If you wait or don't get it all, they tend to get they're unedible. The first batch we did with the first pig was totally unedible.
Well, you didn't have a proper press,
and I didn't really know. Weird. I didn't know what I was doing.
And you did so much of it, and I was like, "Why is he making so much chicholi? He's not even doing it the right way." You couldn't stop yourself. And anyway, Basilio, the neighbor, he's Fusciani, our landlord's cousin or uncle, and he has a farmhouse down the road from us where he just has his garden, and he's very sweet. He's helped us with his tractor at times and stuff and has the kindest eyes. Anyway, we know he loves chicholi. He always is at the porchetta truck. Like, he has a standing reservation there. So Jason went by and was like, "Hey, you want to come and do the chicholi with us and help us out?" And he was totally excited. He said, I'll bring everything. And so he brought the heavy duty hemp linen fabric. And then he brought a handmade wooden press.
It's basically two boards with handles and a hinge in between.
And you just like clamp it closed.
Yeah, you kind of squeeze it closed. But you need three people because
exactly.
You need one person to do the squeezing and the two other people to kind of turn
and hold tight the ends of the
the
bundle of chicholi. So you spread it open like a sheet, if you will. A small amount, but one on either side. Jason poured the fat and the chicholi through it, and then we start to wrap it up, and then just tighter and tighter and tighter, and then thank you. And then Jason used the wooden press, if you will, and it worked pretty good.
It worked pretty good. They were much, much, much better. It also takes the little pieces and kind of smushes them together to make more like flakes.
Chicks. Yeah, flakes.
Yeah, they look kind of like the size of cornflakes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sprinkle salt, and then you throw a couple of bay leaves in there to kind of give the They're really good.
Super good. I'm posting a video of it.
You can't eat that many. It really gives you horrible, horrible stomach.
You have to get rid of them.
Well, you just have to like put a little in a dish and then you just eat those and you get rid of the rest because you don't realize you walk by and keep taking pinches and before you know it, you feel horribly sick. I don't know. I've been told.
I know, but I don't know. Waits. How should I know?
How should I know that?
No, it was a friend of mine said.
So that was the last thing to do with the pigs, and we gave away most of the cheese. We gave some to Gaji, Bazi.
Oh my God, yeah, he really wanted it.
It's not hard to get rid of these
things.
They
came over looking for it.
But these, oh my goodness, thank God these pigs are done. These have been the most expensive. These pigs are the most expensive pigs in the entire world.
So if you're thinking about like dabbling in homesteading, if you will, or raising a pig or two to try it out.
Whew. If you don't have the infrastructure already established and the equipment already there, it's a lot for just two. Like you have
and if
to,
you're and, not gonna, if you're not sure if you're gonna continue doing
yes,
this,
if you say, all right, well, this is what we're gonna do this, and it's gonna be 20 years of doing this. Okay, then it's worth the investment. But they won't even in the afterlife. These pigs are costing me money.
Oh my God! From the pig zone to the cost of buying the pigs to a new freezer.
Two new freezers.
Well, one was a gift from the neighbors when they
moved. Okay, but we needed two new freezers.
Yep. To a new vacuum sealer.
We broke our vacuum sealer because vacuum sealing too many packages of meat.
And what was the latest?
Now I had to get a cold smoker because the bacon is almost ready to cold smoke. And then we have two hams, like American style ham, in the fridge. Brining. So I needed a cold smoker because.
So what do you think we're at for two pigs?
Oh my God. I don't even want to calculate.
12 grand.
No, I have no idea. You can't calculate putting in the, most people, if they're going to put in animals already have the building.
True, but we didn't. And so I'm adding it in.
I don't even know.
These pork chops are going to be so expensive.
Yeah. These are the most expensive pork chops in the entire world. And now the funniest part is, I don't know if I want pigs anymore.
I know. Exactly.
We'll put other animals down there, but the pigs tore up the land. And now what are we going to do with more meat? I don't need more meat for next year.
No. We're good. We'll take a break.
We'll take a little year off. So we'll put something else in there.
Since it's Easter, it means it's time for the Crescia di Pasqua or the Pizza di Pasqua, the classic cheesy savory bread of our area that is served on every table on Easter. And Jason is always great and makes a bunch of forms, a bunch of loaves for the different neighbors. So this year, or different people to say thanks. And this year, we made them for everyone along the road to say thank you for helping with coming over and doing the slaughter of the pigs, along with other bits and things. But you've made 8 forms, I think, so far.
Yeah, we probably will make another 4.
But you were saying how easy this is.
It's really, okay, it's not really bread. So it's not how I learned how to make bread. I learned how to make bread by taking the liquid and the flour and the yeast and, you know, working that to get it to a certain consistency. And then you add in the other things, like if you're going to put in oil or butter or something, or the salt or something like that. This is done. It doesn't come out. I've tried to do it in the traditional way to make
like
bread.
A French style,
not even French, but just the traditional way that you would make bread. The order of operations,
gotcha,
for the ingredients. This is not that, because you have to remember that this was made by Italian people in their kitchen, and it's just a dump it on the board, make a well in the center kind of thing.
Almost more like just a banana bread.
Like, no, not at all.
Oh,
that's not. It's like making. It's like making pasta, but you add a bunch of other stuff in. So you take 2 types of cheese, H. Pecorino and Parm, and then mix it with the flour.
Grated.
Mix it with the flour and a good amount of cheese, with the flour, salt, and pepper. Now, I've always learned that you add the salt to the bread at the end because the salt kills the yeast. Okay? But this is how you do it. Then you add the eggs into the middle of the well, and you do like you would pasta. Now, it comes out as this weird, like, crumbly, mumbly mess. Then you're supposed to add the butter and there's butter or lard and oil. You're supposed to mix that in. Now, I was always taught that that goes in at the very, very, very end of making bread for various reasons you know,
scientific
science. Now it has this consistency of like, what the heck is this? Then you're supposed to put in the milk and the yeast, and the amount of yeast in this bread is incredibly high. It's insane. Just to give you a point of reference, when I make a loaf of bread for us, I will put in 4 grams of fresh yeast in the pre-ferment, and then another 4 grams of fresh yeast when I go and mix up the dough. So 8 grams of fresh yeast to give me a 750-gram loaf at the end. This is a little bit more. This is a little over a kilo, but it has 125 grams of yeast. It is a ton. So trying to mush in this milky yeast water with this gloopy, they kind of don't go together, but once it kind of goes together, it looks right. And then you don't work it. You don't try to do it.
It's more like a sloppy, ploppy dough.
It's a sloppy, ploppy dough. You work it 3 or 4 turns like you would for biscuits or something, and you throw it in the bowl to let it do its first ferment. And since there's so much yeast in it, and I guess you have to have all this yeast to lift all this cheese and the egg and the oil and all that, it only takes like an hour, hour and a half for the first rise. You don't even shape it. You just kind of weigh it out and throw it into the forms, and it does it again. You know, second rise is like an hour and a half, under 2 hours, and then it takes an hour to bake.
You forgot the third cheese.
Oh, then you put pieces of pecorino or Gruyere chunks in there, sometimes on top, sometimes through. But it comes... Here's how I can explain it the best way. It is the... Do you remember Sizzler and their like cheese toast? It's the best. It's like the gourmet fancy version.
Oh, is it gonna
sit on it? Okay. No. The gourmet fancy version of the Sizzler cheese toast.
It is. It's really good. And when it's baking, cooking, whatever.
It's a cake.
Smells
it's more
so good. It's just this peppery, cheesy, toasty smell through the house. And he's been making them at night to deliver them in the morning. And at 10 o'clock at night, I'm just like, oh my God, now I'm starving.
Now, because it comes around once a year, it's good. But if you had it all the time,
once a year for most people, Gaji and Rosanna like to wrap it up in first paper towel, then
foil.
Tin foil, throw it in the freezer.
Pull it out in November. And say,
Can you believe it?
Can't even taste the difference. Can't even taste that it was the freezer. And as the sand consistency crumbles in your mouth and you taste the freezer burn, all I can think of is, oh, you most definitely can taste.
Oh my God, it's hilarious. Anyway.
Ashley will post the recipe.
I did.
Okay, great. And she posts the actual handwritten Rosanna recipe that's in Italian. You can find it all over the place.
Oh, one person had a question. What's a bicchiere di acqua? What's
latte.
A cup? Or latte,
glass.
Sorry. I know, but what about, like, about what is that?
I'll measure it out. It's like a glass of wine.
Okay.
You see that in a lot of stuff.
No, I know. I just thought, listen to your contempt.
Well, that's kind of the secret, too, because you have to make an adjustment with the flour all the time because of the eggs. And so you have to know kind of the correct consistency. But I would a cup? I don't know.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Did you want to talk about canelés?
No, we'll talk about that sometime later.
Okay.
I'm working on a new thing for breakfast.
Working on something for
Why
breakfast.
Why does breakfast have to be so dull? we're working on a new thing. Oh, I know what I did want to talk about. Okay, speaking of bread, I've seen something really troubling online lately, and that is a movement of people using the starter discard, like the spent starter, to make biscuits and to like cook with and eat.
Or we've seen cinnamon rolls.
Okay, so what am I talking about? If you have a mother starter, like a sourdough starter, you'd probably call it, that you feed on a regular basis, meaning you throw away 3/4, most of it, and then you give it new water and new flour to continue the culture. Now, that spent starter, that part that you discard, is gross.
So this all started like a year or two ago, maybe during COVID or something. My best friend's husband is a fisherman in Alaska, and he's a handy guy and likes to cook and try different things. And we're talking to them on the phone one night, and he goes, "Hey, Jay, I got a question for you. What do you do with your spent starter?" She goes, I throw it away. I give it to the chickens.
I either give it to the chickens or put it in the compost bin. What do you mean?
He was like, what are you talking about? And he was like,
oh, no, I cooked that up. I cooked that up.
He thought this was the craziest backwoods thing. And now we see it all the time on Facebook and different things. What is going on? I'm sure people are going to like flood us with saying, it's got great enzymes.
No. Listen, it's done. It's the culture has worked through the flour and everything. It's turned it really acidic. It's made it this weird, consistent, like, it's not, there's nothing left in there.
That's why it's called spent.
That's why it's called the spent starter. It's okay. You can throw it out. It's a cup of flour and a cup of water a couple times a week. So let it go, man. Just let it go. It'll go into the compost bin and it'll turn into
carrot. What if it's got like good stuff for your gut in it?
Sure. All right. Then listen, I think all of you people keep eating it. Just spoon it into your mouth like it's Captain Crunch or something.
Disgusting.
I don't get it. Maybe someone can enlighten me, but it's going to be hard to convince because I change my starter all the time, and I know how gross that like this.
You never attempted to eat it?
No, no.
To fry it up?
Fry it up. You're going to fry that up.
Oh my God.
So yeah, that's a disconcerting trend. It's a cup of flour. Come on, throw it away.
So we've been having a bunch of Gaji and Rosanna pop-ins. I don't know if we're like back on the good list or if they're just back and forth a little bit more right now. And the house is cold, so they like to come over to the fire and they like hanging out with the dogs.
So our adopted – Gaji and Rosanna are kind of like our adopted parents. They're both about 30 years older than us, and they were one of the first –
And they don't have kids.
They don't have children. And one of the first people we kind of met was their doctor.
And in their own ways, he reminds us of my grandpa at times with his hard-ass orneriness, stubborn and all of this. And Rosanna very much at times reminds us of Jason's grandma and her mouthiness. And it's there's something warm and fuzzy.
We talked about on the last
one. Yes, that they're like the Costanzas.
They're the Costanzas, uh-huh. Yes.
So here's a few recent quotes or points of discussion from their last few visits, because they've been coming over quite often. One thing, first of all, it's not Rosanna. It's not Rosanna. It's Rosanna.
Two S's.
She's always very make sure people, whenever she meets them, she really pushes that double S. Anyway, she hates your stove. She talks about it every single time. What's her deal?
She doesn't like my stove because it's not a home stove. It's a commercial stove. So it doesn't have the creature comforts that
lights freak them out.
It's got a pilot. It's like old school. It doesn't have the click, click, click to turn the gas on because I want none of that. It's only a thing to break. I can light a pilot light. So she doesn't like that the pilot light kind of stays on and you light the flame off the pilot light. Second thing is it's a little too tall for her, I think. She doesn't like it. And the knobs, like all the controls, it's not for the home. So it's just got one end of the knob is a big flame and the other end of the knob is a little flame. And you have to adjust the flame how you want it. There's no settings, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
And she's just been noticing it, or I think vocal about it, because they've been coming over and she likes to bring all the ingredients. The last time she did it at dinner, she goes, who else does this? Who else comes over and brings everything for dinner and just makes it here?
Okay. It's also, she called us 20 minutes before and said, we're coming over for
dinner. Are you home? We're coming over. I have everything. It's hilarious. and one of the last times they came over, not this last time, but I think still it was in March, they brought, hopefully, one last panettone. Which was just like, oh my God.
So we should be well out of the panettone.
Yeah. This is
from beginning of December. He probably had these. So absolutely. We're all the way to the Columba, the Easter bread.
Exactly. So they pull out the panettone and it was like, oh my God, this is hilarious. So I think we were just having like sausages and like schiacciata or something for dinner that night. Your homemade sausages.
Schiacciata is potatoes and cabbage smushed together.
Which is delicious. It's a great dish. Anyway, Gaji has declared he was on a diet, so he could only have one sausage. But it was hilarious because this strict diet included, before the dinner, half a bottle of wine, a bowl of potato chips, and then after dinner, two pieces of panettone.
Now, Gaji's a tiny guy. He's not fat at all. But it is just funny for him to announce that he's on a diet.
it's hilarious.
The panettone did taste, I made a comment about how, look, it's still soft. Or Gaji said, it's still soft. And I said, yeah, because it's full of preservatives. And that was very offensive to him.
Oh.
There are no preservatives. I go, doctor, this bread was made 6 months ago, and it's still soft, and it's like the off-brand from the grocery store.
These are those moments where we're like, how are you a cardiologist? How do you still practice? Like, this is crazy.
Luckily, the dogs were the ones who ate the most of
the panettone. Oh, my God. Oh, that's the other thing. Rosanna sits there and talks to you or looks straight at you, and just this thing where she tosses bread to the dogs or like crumbs over her shoulder. But she does it in this quick motion where it's almost like in her mind she thinks she's doing it so quick we don't see her doing it. But she's constantly, almost like it's salt or something, like to keep off a bad omen of tossing salt over your shoulder. She just tosses pieces of bread over the entire time. It is unbelievable.
It is. We tell these stories not to, we're not complaining.
No,
these
I love
it. These are the fun parts because you just sit there and just kind of like, I would never go to anyone's house and crumble bread on the floor.
But or just keep like throwing things on the floor over my shoulder.
I think she's also disgusted that we have two dogs inside of her.
So she's like, who cares?
Yeah. She's like, you live in a dog pen anyway. Gross.
Another hilarious proclamation Gaji made the other day was that Capolacci, a neighbor guy from Piobico, farmer, invented the fork on the front of a tractor. I was like, what?
That was a tall one.
Wait, what? Then
he's
why?
He's like, yeah, Capolacci, this 80-something-year-old guy, he invented forks on a loader for a tractor. And I looked at him and go, really?
He goes, yeah, someone else stole the idea. Because I was like, wait, what? It's like them saying they invented pasta and all of that. It's always hilarious. And it's so serious. And the other one was you found a pretty cool find.
Oh, yeah. On one of our walks, we found the left
antler
of what's called a chervo. It's like a big deer. It's not an elk. But
no,
it's
our buddy, the Alaskan fisherman, looked it up, and he is assuming, based on a little tiny research, it would be called a red stag.
Okay, there you go. I have no idea. They have more of those taller legs and tubular bodies of an elk. Obviously, they're not the size of an elk, but that kind of form rather than a deer's shape. And we found at both of my dogs walked right past it. It's like, you guys are awesome. But it's huge. It's got to be a meter long.
Oh yeah, and like 8 points or 10 points. So Gaji comes over, we show up, and he kept calling it a true trophy. He was like, now that is a true trophy. I'd get that out of the elements and put that in a safe space. Maybe get it made into some handles for some knives. He was like, you could hang it on a wall and make it just a really beautiful centerpiece. But he was just that. Now that's a true trophy. Just cracked us up.
So we'll have for the next podcast, we're going to Easter Sunday with them and the Easter Eve dinner. We'll go over on Easter Sunday, we'll go over the hills to Rosanna's nephew, and I'm sure we will have plenty of stories.
Thank God we're not driving together, because I told him we're taking separate cars in case for the dogs that we need to get back. There was also hot talk last night about the lamb and frying the lamb. How much do you pay for lamb? Where you get the lamb? Blah, blah, blah. Rosanna always loves to talk about this. And that then, so we're getting,
the little baby lamb chops. She likes them. Gaji will only eat lamb fried, which is like, all right, fine. which I don't get because you can fry just about any. You don't have to have the baby center lamb chops that you can fry anything and it'd be fine. But that's Gaju likes that. And I got to admit, it's good. It's just the lambs here are small. So that it's tiny. It's really a tiny little lamb.
And she was saying it's about €20 a kilo.
25 this year.
Mm-hmm. And then I said, oh, should we do some potatoes or something with it? And everyone looked at me like, what are you talking about? She goes, just a gigantic salad.
Ash, you don't, as you know that.
Roasted potatoes? Why wouldn't you have roasted potatoes?
Not with fried food.
I don't get it.
Because you have the breading and it's fried. You need acidity. You need a salad.
I would have the salad with it. I thought everyone looked at me, and even now Jason is doing the same stuff. Like, who does that?
You might as well have asked for ketchup.
I know. Oh, I might as well have said what I did the other day with Gaji. Is Lancia? I thought Lancia is French. Stopped everything because I also pronounced it that way because I thought it was French, and I'm just playing up the American accent. But he put down his fork and knife, pour his glass, whatever it was, looked at me seriously, and he was like, are you kidding? And I was like, what? And he's like, it's Lancia.
Lancia.
Jesus. I did it again.
This company is almost as old as Fiat. Like, it's one of those. I don't think in North America Lancia's ever sold anything. So
I don't know, but he was super offended. He was like, read a book, watch a documentary. speaking of cars.
All right. I don't want to brag. All right. Don't want to brag and make people think like I think I'm better than everyone else.
Like you're a high roller.
I got myself a 25-year-old dump truck with 360,000 kilometers on it at auction.
One or two podcasts ago, he said once you got your driver's license, your gift to yourself for not having had a driver's license for 15 years is to get a dump truck.
So I don't know how I came across it, but there is something called Ritchie Brothers Auctions. They're all over North America. They're all over Europe. And they're...
Say it again.
Ritchie Brothers. If you just Google it, if you want some heavy equipment or just kind of cool stuff to look through, Ritchie Brothers Auctions.
Or you have like a warehouse and need some stuff for the warehouse.
I researched it. It's very legit. They've been around forever. Anyway, there's one about 3 hours north of us, one of the auctions. Now, we watched an auction from the States about a month ago to see like what it was. And it's a real like with a guy going and you can watch it online. This was more
683.
Yeah. This was more like an eBay style with a timed auction where you can, or a silent auction, if you will, where you just put in your bid and then as the clock goes down.
But the day of the auction, it got hot and heavy. It was fun watching the what's ending now.
So I don't understand. Italy always has, especially for things you plug. If you plug something in, I like to say Italy has yesterday's model for tomorrow's prices. Like you go to look at any kind of like TV or any kind of dishwasher, a refrigerator for home stuff. You'll always see that you're paying, it's last year's model, but you're paying next year's model's price. I don't know why. You can't really find deals. I'm like, where are these deals? I finally found where the deals are. It was a lot of fun. So I got an Iveco flatbed dump truck. It's got little wall sides. It carries about a ton and a half of whatever.
It's a three-way dumper.
And you can drive it with a regular license. Otherwise, if they get too heavy or they carry too much, you have to get a commercial license, which I don't want to do because I just barely have my regular one. But I'm super excited. The only problem is I've never done anything like this. It wasn't the big, like a 25-year-old beat to hell dump truck is not the biggest investment in the entire world.
You were under your budget.
I was way under my budget. But I have to go figure out how to get it home because it's
back
about
to logistics,
3 hours
you were
away.
For the tractor.
Yeah. So Gaji's just like, go up there and bring it home. I'm a little nervous to drive a unknown. Now it did.
So he had another old guy call him a puss again. Yeah. So he just do it.
Well, it's you know, it's a 25-year-old car, truck that has a ton of kilometers on it, and I don't know it, and I'm driving it on the Autostrada with people going 130, and it's a poke. Like, it's 3.5 hours away. Not the craziest drive in the world, but far enough to where it's like, can someone truck it down here? Just drop it off in my driveway.
Well, they sure can.
They sure can if you want to pay for it. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. And that'll probably happen after Easter, I would assume.
Yeah, you have
30 days to get it off their lot. Mm-hmm. I just paid for it yesterday.
They had everything from like the big, humongous, crazy equipment and to then even just like cars.
Used cars, yeah.
Used cars. They
had something that almost took my... I almost bit on it. They had a pallet of screws. Just boxes of random screws.
That's what you're going to say?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you were talking about something else.
It was $50 for all the screws I could ever need for the rest of my life. I go, baby, we'll never need another screw again. Look at that. Look at all those screws.
Oh, man. How much did you go for?
$50.
Oh.
Crazy stuff. Like industrial big lighting for 50, like these giant
warehouse
lighting with the big ballasts, like 6 or 8 of them for $50. Like anything from stuff for the house, too. Like they're... I don't know how it comes there, but it'd be like a used lawnmower, not too bad, a used chainsaw, and like a used weed whacker, all in like a package,
little
together.
Bundle for like $120 or something.
Yeah, then there'd be like tool, like Beta or name brand, the toolboxes, the roller ones with all the stuff filled in. And I mean, I sat there for literally for hours and hours looking through all this crap, but it was a lot of fun. I'll keep my eye open for deals. I finally got a deal. I feel like I get ripped off every time I buy anything like this, and I never get a deal. And finally, this guy won.
This guy right
this
here.
This guy right here. He won.
He's on top. You get the. Yeah.
Watch, this is going to turn into a nightmare. It's going to break down. 10 minutes on. I'm on the Autostrada with people flying by. I get to use one of the call boxes.
Oh my god,
that'll be fun.
Gaji did perk up though. You know, everything's a waste of money. Sprecasoldi and look at this American. But then once Jason started saying, I mean, think of all the stuff you could move.
I go, doctor, you don't need to move anything with a dump truck.
And then he started to smile a little bit. Exactly.
Because it gave me so much shit about it. It's like we constantly are looking, not constantly, but a lot of times I'm looking for someone to help me move stuff. Like we got a van, but having a dump truck is opens your world to that sweet, sweet, dump life.
I know. So much dumping. I can't wait. We just got to get it here. Oh, my gosh.
Well, I think that wraps it up.
I think so, too.
We have new stuff to pimp. You got to pimp your...
There's a bunch of new dates added for the summer for a 3-night workshop. Come for a lovely welcome farm-to-table dinner, a pizza class, a market tour, and tasting and lunch up at the Hunter's Hideaway, and in and out for a nice little 3-night taste of the area. So... like I said, check the website. There's a bunch of new dates that we just added for June and July and the beginning of August. And if you didn't get our latest newsletter that just went out, check your spam folder if you'd signed up for it. Sometimes it ends up there, unfortunately. And if you have never signed up, visit the website, latavolamarche.com, LATAVOLAMARCHE, and go ahead and sign up there or shoot me your email address on Instagram or Facebook at La Tavola Marque as well, and we'll add you to the list because the last one had 3 spring antipasti recipes for perfect for Easter, which was a pea crostini, the huevos sodo sala, the eggs with the salsa verde, which is super popular at Easter as well, and a kind of tongue-in-cheek but rabbit confit.
All right. So coming up after Easter for us, we go from the outside to moving inside. It's time to get the house ready in April.
I'm going to start painting today.
Yeah, and getting ready for our first guest in the beginning of May. So we'll come back to you in our contractually obligated under 30 days.
You're such a shit. Oh, my God. Thank you guys for listening. And until next time.
Buona Pasqua.
Ciao, ciao.
Hey, podcast producers and show hosts. Do you want to join a podcast network that celebrates all things Italian? At Sentiti Media, we understand the allure of Italy and its unique culture. Our devoted team of hosts and producers are all driven by their shared passion for Italy. And we work tirelessly to create the best lifestyle podcasts and content that will whisk you away to the very heart of Italy. With us, you can savor the mouth-watering flavors, get lost in the stories from the past, break down the cultural barriers, and truly immerse yourself in the vibrant traditions of this intoxicating country. If you have a great podcast idea or are already in production and would like to join Sentire Media, head over to sentiremedia.com, that's sentiremedia.com, and find out how to submit your show.
Sentire Media.